swift Japanese advance on the national capital paves the way directly for the tragedy of the Panay. Shanghai captured, the Nipponese invaders strike westward with incredible speed and soon are pouring shells and air bombs into Nanking. The defenders bravely ignore a Japanese ultimatum calling on them to surrender. Despite the deadly peril, Norman Alley takes his stand in the besieged city, recording the ruin of war amid the constant rain of steel and high explosives that takes hundreds of lives and lights grisly fires throughout the capital. The Japanese force the Kung Wa Gate, but the bodies of China's soldiers and civilians bear grim testimony to the bitterness of their opposition. The city is ringed by the glow of 100 flames that seem funeral pyres in honor of the heroic or the helpless dead. The invaders scale the walls at night, planting machine guns and light artillery that rake the town by day. Horror piles upon horror, and one pitiful scene surpasses another. Momentary chance lulls in the hail of death. The war-shocked population salvages the pitiful remnants of its shattered homes. Death struck even in the so-called safety zone, where 300,000 people huddled in fear. That man carries the body of his child, clinging dumbly to the forlorn hope that life still inhabits its shattered little body. Day after day, the fury of war sends new hordes from corner to corner, laden with rags and tatters of their broken lives. Standing offshore from the doomed city is the United States gunboat Panay of the Yangtze Patrol, her officers anxiously scanning the waterfront for signs of American refugees. The Panay is the only haven of safety left to Americans trapped in the burning and besieged Chinese capital. Lieutenant Commander Hughes, the officer pointing, and his subordinates, Lieutenants Geist, Anders, Brazier, and Ensign Biewertz, are destined in a few hours to add a new chapter to American naval heroism. Along with the ship's crew, including these picturesque whiskerinos. This form of facial adornment is quite unusual in the United States Navy. It is a special mark of distinction on the Yangtze Patrol. These jolly fellows little know what's in store for them. Wounds, hardships, and for some, sudden death. Fleeing from the beleaguered city, a number of Americans and others arrive at the riverside, hoping to get aboard the Panay. Newspaper men and newsreel men who have remained to the last, ironically enough, there to find that their feeling of security under the stars and stripes is destined to become a mockery. Among the little group is Sandro Sandri, an Italian correspondent who is destined to meet death aboard the Panay. Weldon James, frantically waving his handkerchief, finally attracts the attention of a lookout, and help is soon on the way. Captain Hughes personally takes command of the launch that goes to the succor of the correspondents. The stars and stripes are prominently displayed on the small boat speeding to the rescue of the refugees. The fire in the city is spreading rapidly, and now the captain aims to evacuate every American from the danger zone immediately. And here you may see even more closely how prominently the American flag was flown, as it was at all times during this international incident. Captain Hughes and his crew are a welcome sight to these newspaper men, journalists who know war in all its modern horror, its brutality, and its relentlessness. So now to board the Panay and what they thought would be complete safety. But it means a short trip to death for one of these newspaper men and days of horror for the others. A few short hours after they were aboard, the ill-starred Panay is to steam up the river to a fatal rendezvous. Nothing now, however, beclouds their welcome surcease from the Nanking carnage. Skies are bright this Sunday morning, and danger seems to drop behind with every foot of progress the launch makes towards the gunboat in the stream. As the troubled shoreline recedes, there is a glint of sunshine on the water and on the flags that mark the Panay's nation. The American gunboat is a sort of naturalized citizen, for she was built in China, but constructed expressly for the use of the United States government's Yangtze Patrol, which guards American interests long recognized by treaty. The newspapermen once more set foot on what, to most of them, is home territory. Jim Marshall of Collier's Magazine is there, and Weldon James of the United Press. Two Italian newspapermen accompany the Americans. Preparations are rushed to evacuate the American embassy in Nanking. Diplomats representing the United States government suspend their difficult tasks, for a while at least, pack important state papers, and head for the Panay in cars prominently marked with the American colors. Those on board the Panay extend them a helping hand and a genuine welcome as the officials step upon the vessel's deck. A picturesque figure is bearded J. Paxton Hall, second secretary of the deserted embassy. What a precious freight the Yangtze patrol ship carries now. Besides her normal complement of 55 officers and men, are members of the embassy staff and the refugees who seek shelter on her armored decks. They should be safe here, all of them, under the protection of the American flag and the old established treaties that give that flag certain rights in these difficult waters. Japanese planes and artillery fire make the vicinity of Nanking a place of danger, even for neutral vessels in midstream. So Commander Hughes of the Panay decides to pull upstream. And soon, radio messages and other signals are flying between the Panay and nearby vessels, including the British riverboat Ladybird, also here on a relief mission. Commander Hughes and the skipper of the Ladybird necessarily have to work in close cooperation as representatives of their respective governments in these war-torn waters. Finally, the Panay sends up her flag signals to tell the world she's getting away from the inferno that is Nanking. So it's anchors away. The Panay moves up the river, leading the way as a mothership for various other American craft in the vicinity. She's to act as convoy for several Standard Oil tankers and freighters. In far-off Cathay, carries on in her double mission of mercy and national prestige. The quaint, shallow-draft gunboat, especially built for service on the Yangtze, picks up its convoy, the Standard Oil tankers, and speeds to safety. A Chinese hitchhiker, the native laundryman who serves the Panay, decides that hooking a tow is the quickest way to get out of range of the Japanese shellfire. Far from the terror of the Japanese crossfire, the Panay finds what is thought to be a quiet, restful place. All about the American gunboat in her upstream haven are other vessels crowded to the gunwales with refugees, most of them Chinese employees of the Standard Oil Company. One boat, with crowded decks, looks more like an excursion steamer bound on a holiday than a mercy ship bearing scores from scenes of strife and desolation in the unhappy city. A warplane circles overhead, a sight so usual these hectic days that it's... It's only to awaken the curiosity of Captain Hughes and his companions on the Panay. Many of them join him at the rail, watching the evolutions of the bird of death. Destiny, hand in hand with tragedy, her human sister, paces the skies to an accompaniment drone by the rhythmic beat of the motor. A quiet Sunday afternoon, shortly after lunch. Officers of the Panay and several of the refugees are chatting in the wardroom when suddenly planes appear. The ship has been bombed by Japanese Navy planes. The call to battle stations and the Panay crew rushes to defend their craft against the sudden, unwarranted, unheard-of attack. The ship's machine gunners go into action, some of them half-clad. The captain is wounded. So are others. The ship is a shambles. But whatever the cause of the unmerciful attack, the Panay men will fight to the end. He's vitally hurt.
Imperiled by stray shells of wild artillery fire, the Panay steams up the river. The Japanese launch. This is a prelude to the catastrophe. They identify the Panay and note its course. 20 miles up the river from Nanking, suddenly from the sky, without warning, bombs. The gunners fight back at the assailants from the sky. No panic, just Navy discipline. On deck, men fall stricken as the bombing continues. And that's how the bombs riddled the ship. Take to the boats. That's the order after half an hour of incessant bombardment. Wounded, blood-stained men first. The camera portrays heroism. Sights, but not sounds. There was no sound equipment aboard the Panay, only silent cameras. Abandoned ship. And some jump overboard and swim. The incessant air bombing, bomb after bomb, turning the Panay into shambles and wreckage. Last lifeboat, a motor sampan steering for the nearest land, and an oil tanker. Three accompanied the Panay. The Japanese warplanes bombed them, too. They take refuge on a small island, and there they can see the tankers burn. The well and the wounded on a deserted shore while war is flaming.
So abandon ship is the command. Getting the refugee passengers and the crew ashore is a desperate task. The wounded, of course, have first call. There's little time to lose as the famous vessel has received her death blow. She's settling fast. Other Japanese planes have joined the fight with bombs and machine guns. Even the loaded lifeboats are targets for the war-mad Japanese machine gunners. The riddled Panay bears her wounds bravely, but she is doomed without question. And now we go ashore with Norman Alley in one of the last boats to leave the ill-fated ship. Boatload by boatload, the Panay survivors reach the north shore of the Yangtze, where they can find shelter from the Japanese planes still raining lead mercilessly at everything that moves. Alley exposes himself to film the final moments of the gallant United States warship. And minute by minute now, she's nearer her end as she rapidly takes water and settles lower and lower. first American naval vessel to be sunk under warlike conditions since the World War. An undeclared war, it's true, but one that has outraged all humanity by its ruthlessness and its horror. An undeclared war that spares neither men, women, nor children, that has little regard for treaties or neutrality. One of the Standard Oil boats was beached, and two others bombed and destroyed in the savage attack. And finally, the Panay rolls over on her side and goes down in 10 fathoms. Goes down with her colors still flying, hanging in shreds from her gaff. It's an event that has shocked the world. Japanese forces are combing the river and the air. Panay survivors, virtually helpless ashore, take refuge in the tall reeds that line the riverbank. The wounded are made as comfortable as possible while their injuries are dressed, and leaders of the party make plans for reaching a point of greater safety than the comparative wilderness of the riverbank. Electrician's mate, C.H. Burke of Malacca, Minnesota, plainly shows the buffeting he got in the vicious engagement on the Yangtze. A piece of steel tore the throat of John Henry Lang, chief quartermaster, whose home is in Long Beach, California. Lang is pretty badly hurt, but he's taking it as stoically as his fellows, naval as well as civilian. The conduct of all draws from Captain Hughes the statement, "In my opinion, everyone acted with fine courage and initiative." And the commander's commendation goes out to crew and passengers alike. Many of the wounded are in precarious condition, far from proper medical supplies and the care they need to pull them through the second great emergency in a few short hours. The nearest settlement from which help may be expected is miles away from this spot and several miles inland from the river. The wounded can be taken along the river in boats, but any kind of movement is dangerous for Captain Hughes with his shattered thigh and for the Italian journalist Sandro Sandri, whose wounds, like those of storekeeper Ensminger of Ocean Beach, California, are extremely critical. Tramping slowly over rutted paths with the wounded on crude stretchers, the weary party makes its way over the interminable route to Hoshian. Through the assistance of a Chinese-speaking attaché of the embassy staff, Chinese soldiers have been persuaded to aid the group in its painful escape from the wilderness. Two of the native military carry another heavy burden. These films taken by Norman Alley of the bombing and sinking of the gunboat Panay. Ragged band presses on, eager only to find medical aid for their even less fortunate companion. But for two men, Ensminger and Sandri, the effort is useless. In the village of Hoshian, their wounds prove fatal. And their amazed survivors learn for the first time that Japan and America are not at war. The next stop is the town of Hanshan, and the weary band of survivors finds the first real rest and security since they were bombed. The miles of rough going along the riverbank have been a severe trial to the wounded, despite the wholehearted cooperation of Chinese soldiers and civilians. With all of the officers of the Panay wounded, Captain F.N. Roberts of the Army, military attaché at Nanking, takes charge of the party, and after all the wounded have been attended to, he arranges for the party to be transported back to the Yangtze, where they can be moved to Shanghai. The trip back is by sampan down narrow creeks and canals, slow and tiresome, but not as slow and tiresome as their long trek inland had been, under fear of bomb and bullets. Allie suffers from wounds, too, but he's still able to do his share. The British ship Ladybird awaits them. She was considerably damaged by Japanese shell fire at Wuhu, but she's not out of commission, and her mission is an errand of mercy for her American cousins. The United States ship Oahu joins the rescue fleet, and the American victims of the vicious bombing are put aboard to be carried to Shanghai by an impressive funeral flotilla. Olsebus and Ensminger, the Panay's crew, died from machine gun bullets fired at the lifeboat in which they were on their way to shore. The Panay survivors will never forget those hectic, horrible hours when American blood was shed by war-crazed culprits in an Orient aflame.